Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust way back in 2002. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com. This week, Dr. Lisa Noland. She's chair of the Marriage, Sex and Culture Group of the Anglican Church, and she's based here in Bristol. Then we hear from Scott Bennett. He's a former US Army psychological warfare officer, and he'll be talking about fake news as well as the terrorist financing that he was working on. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk. And if you want to join in, the contact details will be at the end of the show.
My name is Lisa Noland. I'm a sex historian for my sins. I've been tracking the pansexual revolution in which we are living through at the moment. My organization is called the Marriage, Sex, and Culture Group of Anglican Mainstream. So that's the site. That's kind of the parental body. We are an arm that researches, campaigns, explores what is going on, exposes what is going on, and then develops positive responses.
Okay, so what is going on?
We're living through a massive sexual revolution. That's what's going on, in my view.
So what revolution?
Well, it is basically blue sky sexuality. And
so what is that?
That means increasingly what is coming to the fore are different kinds of sexual couplings, family arrangements, etc. And the reason why I'm concerned is that I think my group thinks it's very damaging for society, because most of the time the nasty underbelly of this is not apparent. See, for the longest time, a good example is pornography. We were told pornography is a little bit of naughty fun, you know, enjoy yourself, etc. Well, we now know that pornography has massive roadkill.
So what, for example, what's wrong with pornography?
Okay, well, basically, if you get hooked, and a lot of people do, you become impotent. That's one of the things that it damages you. It damages relationships. It damages how you view people of the opposite sex or same sex, whatever. It's damaging.
And what about this idea of, you know, sort of sexual relations between same sexes? I mean, that's much bigger now, isn't it? Because homosexuality in the 1960s was made legal. So there's been big changes.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is exactly right. The LGBT are the first of a cohort to come out, but there are many other sexualities that are making the same claims and on the same basis. And if we go there, I think we are into serious freefall.
But then you say freefall, but surely this is just basic human rights. I mean, people can do what they want with their own bodies, surely.
Well, yes, but then they should also need to know that the costs, there are costs attached to them, like soaring STDs. I mean, basically, all this stems, to be honest, from Alfred Kinsey, who's the father of the sex revolution. He was into different kinds of sexual relationships, sex with animals, sex with children, sex, same sex. He had hundreds, if not more, partners.
But, I mean, the thing is, the LGBT lobby are not interested in any of that, are they? They're just talking about consenting adults.
Oh, correct. That's right. But I think what I'm saying is they make the claims that they include everyone, but they don't. And all these, and so one of the things my group does is we track all these other alternative sexualities who are saying, our kids are killing themselves, we are being damaged, we're tired of being in the closet, we're coming out too. So I guess what I'm after is a free and frank discussion of the whole pansexual revolution. And in my view, it's really toxic. But most of the time, because once you go there, you're just shut down as, oh, that's hate-filled or whatever. We don't get very far. So I'm delighted to be here.
Okay, so tell us what you think's wrong with this then, because many people who are lesbian, gay, transsexual, whatever, yep, will say that actually this is just me, you know, this is how I am, tough, get used to it.
Oh, correct. Now, I shared my home with a lovely gay guy. He died of AIDS. A close bisexual friend fell in love with me. That was just fine. I agree in live and let live. But the deal is, because all these other sexualities are saying the same thing. They're saying, hold on, why, this is me too. Why can't I come out? And our Stonewalls or other groups are saying, get back in the closet. You can't, of course you can't come out because you will ruin things for us. I believe in live and let live. But what I am concerned about is we don't know most of the time, the underbelly of this stuff is not coming to the fore.
Okay, well, take us to that underbelly for a minute. What were the real damaging things that you say will happen with this revolution?
Well, basically, people are seen far more as commodities. Huge number in terms of STIs, STDs, psychological brokenness. Basically, see, sex is fire and sex is glue. So you have lots of different partners. You glue. See, that is what is happening in your brain. You're gluing when you're making love, when you're having sex. You're gluing to all these different people. So it is makes it harder to form stable, lasting, monogamous relationships if you are giving yourself like that beforehand.
But don't some people see it just as a bit of fun?
Oh, of course, of course. But you well might see it as a bit of fun, but your body remembers differently. See, that's what oxytocin is emitted when you have an orgasm. And vasopressin for males. It does, there's an act that happens, or there's a physiological act in your body that happens when you have sex.
Oh, so how is this sexual revolution affecting society now, and how will it affect it more in the future?
Okay, well, basically, it's twofold. One, there's huge damages in terms of costs, family breakdown, people going from partner to partner, children not knowing who their moms or dads are, and children desperately need to know who their moms and dads are. And we are seeing that now.
Why?
Because it's important to know. For most people, they do want to know where they've come from. They want to know their roots. It's very important to know what my heritage is in terms of medical stuff, in terms of cultural stuff, in terms of moral formation. We adults can play around far more, and they do, and sometimes they pay for it, other times it doesn't seem to. But kids, it's a very different situation for kids, and that's really what we are most worried about.
The church. In what way are you connected to the church then?
Well, I'm an Anglican, and I am with Anglican Mainstream, which is a website. We track this cultural stuff. We are very concerned about what is going on right now in the Anglican Communion. That's the huge global body. The Church of England is a very, very small part.
So the Anglicans, let's just be clear about this, it's actually largely the old British colonies, isn't it, including the United States?
Okay, the Anglican Communion, well, let's see. The Anglican Communion is actually global. It's not just the old empire or, you know, whatever. I understand why you say that. But, for instance, in Nigeria, they have more Anglicans there, from what I understand, than all the rest of the Anglicans in the world. See, the Church of England is actually very small numerically, and it's shrinking.
But this week, the Church of England has been looking at same-sex marriage in the church, so mm-hmm. whether or not to conduct same-sex marriage ceremonies in churches across Britain.
Mm-hmm. That's right, they are.
So what do you, have you got any thoughts and advice for the church as they're discussing this?
Well, I think they are basically faced with a choice. They can either go progressive, that's their term. I try to use people, you know, the group's own terms. The progressives are wanting to adapt the church to modern whatever, ways of thinking, etc., so-called modern ways of thinking. And traditionalists like myself hang out with Jesus, and Jesus was crystal clear in terms of sexual issues.
Well, many people will say, no, actually, he wasn't. You know, that there's very little in the New Testament. There's a lot in the Old Testament, but not much in the New Testament about sexuality, that Jesus came along to sort of liberate people.
Do you know the actual detailed analysis of that is actually quite incorrect? He spoke more about sex than he spoke about poverty. He spoke tons, and see, people think, oh, well, there are only, let's say, six bits in the New Testament that deal with homosexuality. But Jesus spoke tons about porneia, which included homosexuality. And Paul specifically targeted homosexuality. But I'm not just talking about homosexuality. I'm talking about any sexual sin, sexual behavior outside of.
So did Jesus actually say a marriage has to be between a man and a woman? He didn't, did he?
Oh, yes, of course he did. Sorry, yes, yes. And he was very clear. He used two words in the Greek for sexual sin. One was moik and the other was porneia. And porneia included incest, rape, you name it. It's anything outside of heterosexual sex in marriage, heterosexual marriage.
I suppose you might call it fornication, isn't it? Sex outside marriage between a man and a woman. So what about also the church at the moment is looking at the idea of women bishops. What are your principles? Are there any principles that you've got on that?
Okay, well, the church in England and in many other countries has already ordained women bishops. So I think that's probably an issue that has come and gone. Now, I work very closely with colleagues, let's say in Kenya, and I'd love to tell you a little bit about that later on. But they ordain women priests, but not bishops. So there are various views on that.
Okay. Archbishop, are we going to get a woman Archbishop of Canterbury? And would that be a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't think it would be a good thing, but...
What's the principle against this, then? Why should anybody say, well, a woman shouldn't be a bishop or an archbishop?
Okay, because some people would say that that is somehow representing, or that in Scripture there is, in the New Testament, a clear model of male headship, just like Christ is the head of the church. That's the paradigm that they are working with. Other people would say, well, there were women... there were women in leadership all throughout the Bible, so they wouldn't have a problem with that. So there can be people who are very biblically concerned and invested who go either way on that one.
What about the Catholic Church and this whole vow of celibacy for priests?
Well, I have good Catholic friends, and they who are devout and practicing in their faith, and they go both ways. Some think that priests should be allowed to marry. And actually, historically, it used to be that priests in the Catholic Church could marry long time ago, many, many centuries ago. But I can see both sides of this.
So what do you think is the future for the family, generally?
I'm concerned about the future of the family, because basically adults are not taking seriously their need to invest in their marriages and their kids. And they seem to get away with it, okay. But the next generation is the generation that pays for it. So I am concerned. I used to listen, I've worked with kids for decades, and I would hear them talk about how their parents simply were so into their own stuff, they simply could not be good mums and dads. And kids desperately need parents who are invested in them.
Well, there's another side of all this, and that is that now you've got both parents, pretty much, most families, having to go out to work in order to enough money to pay the rent or the mortgage, so they don't get to spend much time with children.
And, you know, that is a really dangerous thing. I mean, I purposefully did not work while my daughter was growing up, because I wanted to invest in her, because I knew before she'd be grown up before we knew it, and so we just lived at a lower standard. But kids very much need their mothers and fathers to be invested in them, and to be honest, that's the only thing that lasts. You know, you are, I don't know how old, I'm almost 60. Before we know it, you see, time passes, and it's what you have in terms of your children. That's your, in some ways, a time bottle that goes of you that goes into the future.
So why is family so important to you?
Because it's the bedrock of society, I guess, and it's the place where the next generation can grow up, can learn healthy habits, can become who they really are meant to be. And kids really need their moms and dads, if at all possible. Now, I married a widower. He didn't have, so my stepson didn't have his mother, so I was the best he had, but he was at a loss. It damaged both of us, actually. It was hard work. So I really do believe in marriage and the family. And that's what this group is about.
Tell us about, you've got some sort of events. And I know you're actually yourself based here in Bristol, aren't you?
I am.
And
indeed.
You're the chair of the group.
Yeah, I am indeed. I am indeed. Yes. Okay, well, one of the things that we do in terms of positive responses is we work with partners around the world that are also that also believe in marriage, the family, traditional values, that are good, that are strong, that are whatever. Anyway, and one of our partners is in Kenya, and we are trying to raise about 10,000 to 15,000 quid by, wait for it, selling used toiletries, clothes, shoes, all this stuff that often is given to charity shops and then just ends up in landfill because no one wants to buy it. So this charity is with the Anglican Church in Kenya. It's working with children who are, you know, you talk about the family. There we have feral children who can earn more by prostitution in a day or two than a school teacher can in a month. But what, in fact, got this from a Nairobi policeman who works with this population, these poor kids, that some of these kids are so damaged by all the sex. See, there's a huge Western tourist trade here. So these kids are so damaged, they end up having to wear nappies. That's how it lands. See, that's the kind of thing, and I didn't want to kind of go into this, but extreme sex practices are part of what we are very concerned about because it's damaging. So these poor folk in Kenya, they don't have an NHS to stitch them up. So anyway, what we are doing is we're working with a group that works with these boys who are hardened, who are angry, who are so twisted, so broken, but they come alongside. The head of the project was himself raised. His family was broken. He, his stepfather beat the deuce out of him. Dreadful, dreadful. So he would kick him out of the home. The mother did nothing. Lots of younger brothers and sisters, but he never knew his own father. So the stepfather would kick him out. He would sleep in under trees, in a ditch, whatever. And the only kind neighbor to take him in the middle of the night, this project director woke up to find something. Yeah. And basically, the local pedophile was the only one who would let him sleep in his home, would give him food, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this so damaged this young man that he came to the end of his rope. He was with his boyfriend. He was just at the end, It was so bad. So someone very kindly, some kind person said, you know, there's a really nice priest down the road. Why don't you just go and talk to him? Maybe he'll make you feel better. I don't know. This priest turned this boy's life around. He was he was Christ to him, totally invested in him, put him back together, years of counseling, years of education, years of whatever. So now this young man is running the program. So he has a way with broken kids because he gets it. He was there. So I would love to hear from people who would like to help. Oh, and finally, the other thing is, these people do not want handouts. They're sick and tired of handouts. The dependency culture is all wrong. It just breeds more dependency and whatever. So my project director, very much believes in microenterprise and encouraging these lads to be able to stand on their own. So this is the other aspect of this. So I would love to hear from anyone who could help on that. So used stuff, I would love to hear. So my email, Dr. Lisa, so that's DRLISA 1957 @gmail.com.
You keep talking about investing in people. We normally associate that term with money.
Yeah. Yes, but I find that many people already have causes that they're very committed to, and I totally get that. But what I'm asking is for what people don't want, which is, you know, they could happily give away their toiletries, or they don't like the smell of that perfume, or whatever, whatever. Yes, I'd love money, but to me, this is, I call this the greenest kind of charity around, because we do retrieve stuff that would otherwise end up in landfill. And that stuff goes to the Ukraine, and then the monies go to Kenya to help these lads stand on their own two feet. And get something of a chance in
life. Okay, where can we find details about you and the MSC online then? Or by other means? You know, whereabouts can people get in touch?
Sure. So the website that I work with is Anglican Mainstream. So that's anglicanmainstream.org. And my email is, as I've said, drlisa1957@gmail.com.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Scott Bennett, I was a former U.S. Army officer in the Psychological Warfare Division at U.S. Special Operations Command, U.S. Central Command. I was a counterterrorism analyst and liaison officer for the State Department. And before that, I was with the Bush administration, and I was also a defense contractor with Booz Allen Hamilton, and specifically did psychological warfare and terrorism finance. So I tracked the terrorist financial supplies, banks, routes, donors, and all of the financial instruments that have been used in funding Saudi terrorism, Qatari terrorism in Libya and ISIS, the Middle East, Syria, Iraq, basically all over U.S. Central Command's area of operations.
Now, to put it politely, you were eased out of your job. Would you like to just share with us what you found out about the way terrorism is financed while you were there?
Well, I ran into Booz Allen Hamilton. My boss was Dov Zakheim. Dov Zakheim was the comptroller at the Pentagon when $2.3 trillion went missing. And the next day was the attack on the Pentagon and 9/11. So Dov Zakheim was my boss who was in charge of that. And after his Pentagon stint, he went down to U.S. Central Command in Florida. And that's where I was introduced to him. And I started finding out all sorts of contractor fraud and failures in the intelligence community, failures to share intelligence, failures to pursue a lot of the banks and international partners that were behind the Saudi, Qatari, Kuwait, Middle Eastern funding of terrorism. And I didn't know why, but I found out when I started making reports and giving briefings and asking questions. And I was fired from Booz Allen Hamilton, charged with a paperwork error on a housing form that they had me fill out, and thrown into jail by the Obama Justice Department for about 2 years, and appealed and had military attorneys and made as much noise as I could. But it was a cover-up designed to silence me. And what was ironic was when I was put in jail, I met Brad Birkenfeld, the Swiss banker who had also been imprisoned by Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer and Hillary Clinton and Obama in 2009. So he had been there for a year, and I had just met him. And it was sort of a divine event, because here is the man that I should have been introduced to in the military with all of the Swiss bank accounts that were being used by people like Abdullah Aziz, the Saudi royal family, various people in the Israeli, Qatar, Saudi circles. And I had to go to jail to meet him. And he showed me all of his WikiLeaks cables and his banking statements and his entire repertoire. And I took that and I said, you know, no one in the military has ever contacted you about this stuff. And he said, I've been forbidden to share it with anybody in the military. So I said, well, I'm an officer still in the military and I've been thrown in here, but that doesn't stop me from filing reports. So I took it as an officer and filed it up to the military, Pentagon Inspector General, and the House and the Senate Intelligence and Armed Services Committee. And everyone you can imagine in Washington, D.C., and the military brass, and as well as the media, people in Fox News and CNN and NBC, ABC. I was introduced by the Washington Post and Michael Isikoff, Tom Hamburger, and no one did anything. No one lifted a finger. No one investigated. No one asked me for anything. So that's probably the greatest scandal and betrayal of America that's ever heard, that's ever happened.
What should these people have done, both congressmen, senators, military officers, and the media?
Well, they should have immediately had a closed-door debriefing where Brad Birkenfeld's bank accounts and financial instruments were brought forth and examined for connection to men on the ground that were in Syria, that were in Libya, that were in Iraq, and track those financial instruments back to their sources, which led to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, and they never did that. And they never examined or questioned me, a military officer who did this for a living and had a top secret SCI clearance. So I had the top secret clearance that no one else had, and I did this for a living. So you would think they would question the officer who provides this, and they never did.
Doesn't that suggest that this is, rather than a mistake, that this is a deliberate cover-up, that these bank accounts are being used with the knowledge of some people at the top in the Western military to finance terrorism?
Well, that's the only conclusion you can make, is that it was a cover-up, that these bank accounts were being used for nefarious reasons, including terrorism. And they didn't want whistleblowers making noise. That's why Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer, who were the attorney general and the assistant attorney general, worked for the law firm Covington & Burling that represented these Swiss banks. And Covington & Burling also networked and represented people in the Clinton Foundation. And Dov Zakheim, my boss, his son, was given a job at Covington & Burling. So this law firm, Covington & Burling, and its connections to the Clinton Foundation and Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer all recently came out this past 6 months in the WikiLeaks revelations. So the combination of the WikiLeaks, the combination of Oliver Stone's film Snowden, which depicts Brad Birkenfeld as a Pakistani banker, incidentally, but it depicts Brad Birkenfeld being targeted by CIA operatives and thrown in a jail, and the CIA tried to use him as an asset. Brad told me the exact story back in 2012. So the combination of all of these material information sources coming from good trusted sources, WikiLeaks, Snowden, and myself, is and Brad Birkenfeld, leads to an absolutely incontrovertible series of connections and proof that the military, the intelligence community, and the Congress had an obligation to review, and they never did. The hope is that Donald Trump, the new presidency, is going to be different, that he is going to investigate where others refuse to. And if he doesn't, then he's just as guilty.
Now, you were working at something called CENTCOM in Florida. This is something very few people have heard of. What, I mean, because it takes responsibility for U.S. military involvement and other sorts of involvement in the Middle East. What sort of things go on at CENTCOM, and what's its role in the world today?
Well, U.S. Central Command is the U.S. military area of operation for all of the Middle East countries, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Egypt, Lebanon, Libya. It's recently branched off into AFRICOM. But all of the Middle East countries, Sudan, Yemen, they are under U.S. Central Command's jurisdiction because of the wars that we've led over there. And it's a base that has an operation in Tampa, Florida, at MacDill Air Force Base, and also, of course, in the Middle East. And at MacDill, you have an international presence of Australians, United Kingdom, New Zealand, Canadian, Australian personnel that all work and combine their intelligence efforts for prosecuting the various wars in the Middle East. So Central Command is, and also U.S. Special Operations Command, which I also work for, are down in Florida. And they really are the tip of the spear for all of the military operations we have in the Middle East. And that's, you know, where all of this material should have been examined and should have been investigated, should have been prosecuted. I should have had Brad Birkenfeld in the skiff interrogating him. But instead, the only place I interrogated him was in jail. But it still gave me all of the information that the American people don't know anything about, but that we've recently published and are aggressively pushing forth. And anybody can read it by going to lulu.com and Googling Shell Game by Scott Bennett. The report was shell game, a military whistleblowing report to Congress. And all of the documents, all of the supplemental forms and evidence and WikiLeaks materials and letters from various congressmen and senators that were trying to bury this, trying to cover it up, are all contained there. And we expect it to be coming forth and being released more and more.
Now, Central Command, some people would say it should be shut down. What business have the United States got militarily intervening in all these countries right across the Middle East and the northeast of Africa?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Because is it in the American people's best interest? Is it in the European people's best interest? Is it within the confines and the parameters and the laws of our constitutions which govern the exercise of our military? I would say no in every respect. And in fact, the United States and Britain and the United or France, we've all been on the wrong side of terrorism because we've sold our souls for a barrel of oil and the pegging of the U.S. petrodollar or the U.S. dollar to oil is really the reason and the basis for our alliance with Saudi Arabia. And yet Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabi ideology, which it fanatically pushes, is the very ideology which ISIS and al-Qaeda and all of these extremists have been following blindly and beheading and doing the most heinous acts that the human imagination is capable of. That is entirely Wahhabi. And, you know, Americans really are sorely ignorant of the differences between the Saudi Arabian Wahhabi Salafist Takfiri types, which basically believe you're either a Muslim or you are a slave or you're killed. You either convert or you die. And that's the Wahhabi Saudi Arabian view. The Shia, the Iranian, the Syrian are not like that. But we are very ignorant of those differentials. And I think a large part is because Israel has dominated the information flow and tried to push America against Iran in order to facilitate the greater Israel project of Odin and On, where the geographical footprint is expanded and Israel has a large geographical presence.
Now, Trump's defense secretary, I think he is Mad Dog, they call him, James Mattis. He was the chief of CENTCOM. What do you make of him?
Well, James Mattis has a lot of explaining to do on one level because we supplied him with the report, Brad Birkenfeld and myself, on terrorist financing from Union Bank of Switzerland, from Saudi Arabia and all these various bank account holders that Brad Birkenfeld was the personal banker of. We supplied General Mattis and U.S. Central Command and U.S. Psychological Operations Command and the Pentagon Inspector General. We supplied them with this report, and they refused to do a single thing. I had an officer at Fort Bragg hang up on me when I questioned him about what was being done. So they've acknowledged it. They know that it exists. And I've seen senators writing letters. For example, Senator Bill Nelson of Florida wrote Senator Dianne Feinstein about me and my report, making all sorts of accusations and threats, but yet never once questioning or raising the issue of the substance of the report. Never once talking about the illegal terrorist financing Swiss banks that were cited in the report. Instead, he was criticizing me for whistleblowing as a Booz Allen Hamilton contractor. So the American senators and congressmen, including John McCain, including Lindsey Graham, including Dianne Feinstein, and a whole host of others, Mike Rogers, Peter King, including Jeff Sessions, they've all been informed and they all have blood on their hands. And they really have an account to give and answer a question in the dock. And some of them should be convicted of treason and executed. James Mattis was informed. What he did about it was absolutely nothing. Michael Flynn was also informed. And 30 days after being informed is when the memo came out from the Defense Intelligence Agency citing the Sunni Salafist Saudi Arabian desire to establish an ISIS state and financing them. Well, where did he get that idea? Well, one source came from us. But yet they've never done anything. They've never examined Brad Birkenfeld or myself. They've never put us together and looked at these accounts and the WikiLeaks cables and the specific bank holders. So the pattern is hide, cover up, and attack and slander the spokesperson, attack the character of the whistleblower.
What about Michael Flynn? He's been forced to resign this week, just after a couple of weeks in post as the National Security Advisor. What do you make of that motives behind that? Is that good, bad thing? Or because it's quite clearly to do with the relations with Russia.
Well, you know, that was probably the best quality that Michael Flynn had, was that he wasn't looking to make war with Russia. He was actually smart enough to realize that Russia is a natural ally of the United States and has more culturally in tune with the American people, as the Orthodox Christians that they are, than most others. So General Flynn's attitude towards Russia was a very healthy breath of fresh air. The only negative aspect, I would say, is his vehement, violent hostility towards Iran and the misguided understanding is of them as a state sponsor of terrorism and as the source of radical Islamic extremism. That's just ignorant, because the Iranians are not that temperamentally inclined, and certainly not politically inclined, because they've never waged war on anybody since 1775. So to say that Iran is an enemy is really an agenda that is not the American people's agenda. It's not in the best interest of Americans. But, of course, he's subject to a lot of the Israeli-American Political Action Conference, and the Israelis' lobby, as we know, is very active. But he was if he was fired, you know, I've said this on Press TV, there's a couple possibilities, and we don't know the whole truth. If he was legitimately fired by Trump for indiscretions, then that's one thing. But it appears that Trump wanted to keep him. And if he abandoned his post, if he quit Trump, then I think he's a coward and a weakling and stupid, because he had a duty to serve his president. He had a duty to stand his ground and weather the storm and not back away from anyone. The other possibility is that, you know, Trump recognized things in him that were deficient, and he made that call.
Now, hang on, because it's always – we can get lots of information from Trump because he uses Twitter. And one of the things he said is that he believes that there were illegal leaks from the FBI that have caused the downfall of Michael Flynn. So clearly Trump is not happy.
Well, that would make sense as well, because we have a lot of Obama people that were in the State Department, in the NSA, in the Pentagon, that would be – using every opportunity they could to undermine anything Trump was doing. So Ben Rhodes or people in Homeland Security or NSA, they were the ones most likely tapping into any phone calls or doing any leaks. Of course, the FBI and the CIA have to have Russia as an enemy. They have to have Iran as an enemy to justify their budgets and their personnel. So if Trump was really upset about him going – which he shouldn't have done. I think, Flynn should never have left. Then Trump really needs to unleash the full force of his Department of Justice to investigate who did this leaking of Flynn's material and prosecute them, because you do have an oath to secrecy when you are employed by the United States government. But I think that's all going to come out. But Trump really needs to get aggressive and attack, because it's clear – he's being attacked from all sides just for political reasons. This has got nothing to do with reality or policy. This is all Democrat, neoconservative war hawks against Trump, because he wants to make friends with Russia and he doesn't want to go to war. I think his statement to Netanyahu saying do not build any more settlements for right now, I think he said back off or put it on hold. I think that's a positive action. He's got to be ginger, of course. He's so new in the job that he's getting attacked from all sides. So he can't necessarily say what he means. He has to sort of pull the rope that's been the U.S. policy for the past 25 years.
Okay, now you're an expert in terrorism, I think it's fair to say, and we keep hearing this ever since 9/11, terrorist, 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 all the time. Now, a terrorist is supposed to be a non-state actor, and yet what you have uncovered, particularly to do with financing, suggests that actually at arm's length, a lot of the terrorists are being financed covertly by intelligence services. I wonder if you think that's fair, and how does that change the way we should see terrorists and terrorist acts?
Well, when we start at the beginning of 9/11 and we look at the September 11th attacks in New York and the Pentagon, any reasonable person walks away knowing that those were artificial false flag attacks, that it's impossible for buildings to fall at free fall speed, that planes could never have melted metal, and that the Pentagon was hit by a missile, not by a plane, because of the absence of the plane parts. I know that for a fact because I drove by the Pentagon the next day when I was doing my doctoral studies at Catholic University, and there was no plane parts anywhere. It was just one big blue tarp covering a hole. So the artificiality of the September 11th attacks, we know from a scientific point of view. And we also know from a political point of view that that attack was used to justify the war on terror to expand the U.S. hegemony into the seven countries in 5 years, as General the NATO general Wesley Clark had said. So they justified this endless war in the Middle East, which some would say, like Scott Ricard, that was part of the Israeli Odedanon plan to expand its geographical footprint. They did that from 2001 until, I mean, really 2000 to present. It's been ongoing. And they've expanded into Libya and Syria, and they tried to do it in Egypt. The Arab Spring was just one big psychological warfare product engineered by the CIA. I was there at the RAND Corporation when they were planning it, so I can say it with absolute authority. I can also say I've interviewed people like James and Joanne Moriarty, who were in Libya as Americans, and provided people like Michael Flynn and the CIA with all of the intelligence they needed, that Saudi Arabia and Qatar were state funders with Hillary Clinton of all of these mercenaries to come into Libya, overthrow Gaddafi, steal the gold, steal the natural resources, base an Israeli base up in the mountains. And since then, we've had the fall of Libya and millions upon millions of Africans and Muslim Islamic people flood up into Europe. So the European invasion by the Muslim population is really the fruit of the American policy and the British policy under Cameron, as well as Tony Blair, and the French policy under Sarkozy. But there are some striking examples of treason and cover-up that should be examined, such as the fact that American politicians and I think European politicians were paid $10 million to appear and give positive comments and take photographs with the rebels. And that $10 million came from the $500 billion that was stolen from the Libyan economy. Libya was described as a bank, as a country, but it was really just one single autonomous bank. It was not connected to any of the globalist banks. And I don't think anybody better than you, Tony, is the expert in some of these, such as the Rothschild banks and the tentacles of some of these organizations through the Council of Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergs and others.
Well, also the Bank for International Settlements. I think we can't let that one pass by because this is the central banker's central bank in Basel, yep, in Switzerland, that was involved in the Second World War in financing Hitler, and also providing the Nazis all the foreign exchange that they needed. And at the end of the Second World War at the Bretton Woods Conference, yep, a vote was passed to shut down the BIS. Now, we are in the UK, dubiously, I suppose, privileged to have the head of some of their regulation committees now running the Bank of England as governor of the Bank of England. Mark Carney was in charge of, in the noughties, in the run-up to 2008, in running global banking regulation. So the man who was responsible for letting the banks off the hook, allowing all the false accounting, is now in charge of the Bank of England. So I suppose you can only say God help us with someone like that at the reins, because they kept saying that he was from Canada when he was introduced, and everyone talks about him as being from the Bank of Canada, but that was a really tiny role that he had. Much more important was his role at this Nazi bank in Basel. But anyway, look, just to bring it round to some kind of conclusion here, fake news is a phrase we keep hearing since the 17th of November 2016, when it was announced by Barack Obama and Angela Merkel in Berlin as a great plague that we all had to watch out for. 2 days after, by the way, Google releasing their fake news app 2 days before the announcement by Obama and Merkel. So one wonders if maybe they were doing the PR for Google when they were announcing it. And I wonder what you make of this phrase and how genuine you think it is. And is it possible to get hold of news that isn't fake news? And if so, where from?
Well, I think, the true news, the truth, is coming from people like yourself, Tony, alternative media types, from trusted sources, men of integrity, researchers, academics, people who do their homework, who can coordinate and connect the dots and pull together all of the research that we've got from history, from politics, from the international map, from the international financial flows and systems and the stakeholders and all of that. It's a very complicated game. But for the intellectually astute and those with history, those who've actually worked in the intelligence, military, and political circles, it's a little bit easier. But it comes from sources other than the mainstream media. The mainstream media, of course, are CIA dominated. It is and I saw this when I worked in the various circles. CIA, the Mossad, and MI6, and Saudi intelligence have a stranglehold on the American communications and the American channels, on TV, on the newspapers. So they're dominated by the ideology, and they're also crippled by a retardation in the moral characters of the people who work as journalists and editors. They really just follow a script. There's a laziness. There's no integrity. There's no national service. There is simply worker ants in some sort of nest mentality. And I think that's what sets the alternative media apart, is when we investigate and speak and present ourselves, it's out of a sense of loyalty, love for our fellow human beings, love for our country or what it used to be, and trying to resurrect and regain it from this international globalist village attitude. So the CIA, Mossad, the British MI6, FBI, they all have their tentacles in the American information systems, and I would include the British as well. We do have hope, though, when we see more of the right independent people like Marine Le Pen and to a certain degree in the United Kingdom and the Brexit vote and with Trump. I think those are indications of the people's impulse towards overturning the establishment, overturning the privileged class, and really getting people without a party to work in the political influence areas. And I hope and pray that Donald Trump is such a person. I hope and pray he pulls back this misadventure of the American military in the Middle East, that he makes allies with Russia, and that he gets off of this crazy track of blaming Russia for Ukraine and Crimea. I've advised them that it was nothing to do with Russia. It was everything to do with Obama and Victoria Nuland and Hillary Clinton and the EU. That's where the Ukrainian coup came. And Russia simply absorbed Crimea, which was part of its original landmass for a long time, to protect its own geographic interests in the Black Sea. So I think Trump understands that. And his next level of education needs to be regarding Iran in comparison to the Saudi Arabians, and really shrinking this Wahhabi ideology back to Saudi Arabia and limiting that.
Let's hope that Trump makes it to high school. Anyway, what about where to get news which is not fake news? Is it possible? Because I think most people with half a brain can see we're being bombarded with all sorts of propaganda at the moment. So where do we go to find something that isn't fake news?
Well, you know, some of the men that I work with and talk with on Project Camelot TV and Jim Fetzer and Veterans Today and Mike Harris and Catherine Shockdom, Press TV and RT, I think, are good sources to an extent. It's coming largely from the media, from the internet, and of course hang on,
because the internet is the biggest source for fake news, surely.
Well, that's what a lot of the mainstream media are trying to pitch. There are some trolls and psyops that are meant to exacerbate the fake news brand and trying to make people think that there are propagandists out there. But I think when you have well-researched channels that put forth very sound information like SOT, S-O-T-T network, and Sputnik, I think, is good. I think people can reach their own conclusions that those are factual examinations and well-researched topics.
I mean, people will say that Sputnik is just Russian propaganda.
Well, you know, I think people have to make their own judgment based on the facts and the research and comparisons. I mean, they've been trying to say Russia and Russia Today and Sputnik and others have been propaganda simply because they're telling the truth. I think the propagandists are saying that because they're trying to keep people asleep in a lie and keep them in fear.
Okay, I'm going to give you one key issue that people should watch out for fake news on, which you think is one that the propaganda is the hottest on, you know, because what we tend to get is channels which are telling 90% of the truth, but on some issues they skew, they spin like crazy. I'd like to just give you finally one issue you think we should really watch out for the fake news on that issue.
Well, terrorist financing is I know best, and that is trying to sell Wahhabi Saudi Arabia as an ally in terrorism, and it's not. Saudi Arabia has been depicted as one of the partners of the Israeli Zionist U.S. War on terror and terrorist financing. I mean, we're fighting it and funding it at the same time. So Saudi Arabia getting a CIA medal, getting a medal from the CIA director, who incidentally received our report Shell Game and did nothing when he was in Congress. I think that's the greatest example of fake news, is that the Saudis are playing a role in fighting terror when in actuality the Iranians and the Russians are fighting terror starting in Syria. And I think Assad is smart to welcome U.S. assistance and really show that he's not the evil gas-wielding terrorists that they've been trying to make him look like.
Okay, and your Shell Game report, where can people find that online?
People can just Google Shell Game by Scott Bennett or go to the website. The publisher is lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, and it has a full report on all of the financial WikiLeaks cables and congressional reports that show very clearly the Saudi Arabian Swiss Bank and most importantly, the political cover-up that occurred in the United States Congress of this whole thing, which I hope one day they will be very soon prosecuted for, because it's one of the greatest scandals in the history of this country.
Okay, so that's Shell Game by Scott Bennett on lulu.com. You can find that on your favorite search engine, not necessarily the NSA's front end, Google. Scott Bennett, thanks very much.
Thank you for fighting the good fight, Tony. You do a great job.
Thanks, Scott. That's all for this week, Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. If you're online, you can subscribe to our emails or download the podcast from dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests this week, Dr. Lisa Noland, Chair of the Marriage, Sex and Culture Group of the Anglican Church, based here in Bristol. And also to Scott Bennett, former US Army Psychological Warfare Officer. Also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects, a Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. And anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokescroft, just off Jamaica Street, 0117 909 6897. Or brsc.org.uk online. Also at Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733. That's one word, volunteerbristol.org.uk. Also, there's the National Volunteering website, which is do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
Well, on a brighter note, commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles ain't asking too much, is it?
You might wish to stay on and listen.
It was a place where everything was legal.
I met this woman.
So if you're looking for emotional satisfaction, my advice to you is seek professional help.
Thank you for joining us live on the air.
My pleasure.
One Nation. Under God has turned into one nation under the influence of one drug. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV, its satellite links are United States of unconsciousness. Apathetic, therapeutic, and extremely addictive. The methadone metronome, pumping out 150 channels 24 hours a day. You can flip through all of them, and still there's nothing worth watching. TV, is the reason why less than 10% of our nation reads books daily. Why most people think Central America means Kansas. Socialism means un-American, and apartheid is a new headache remedy. Absorbed in its world, it's so hard to find us. It shapes our minds the most. Maybe the mother of our nation should remind us that we're sitting too close to the television. The drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV is a stomping ground for political candidates, where bears in the woods are chased by Grecian formulated bald eagles. TV is mechanized politics, remote control over the masses, co-sponsored by environmentally safe gases. Watch for the PBS special. It's a perpetuation of the two-party system, where image takes precedence over wisdom, where soundbite politics are served to the fast food culture, where straight teeth in your mouth are more important than the words that come out of it. Race baiting is the way to get selected. Willie Horton or will he not get elected on television? The drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation.
On the screen is an address where you can mail your tithe offering or gift of love.
Okay, got the idea? All right, Robin, concentrate.
Better living
through television.
TV, is it the reflector or the director? Does it imitate us or do we imitate it? Because a child watches 1,500 murders before he's 12 years old. And then we wonder why we've created a Jason generation that learns to laugh rather than abhor the horde. TV is a place where armchair generals and quarterbacks can experience firsthand the excitement of video warfare as the theme song is sung in the background. Sugar-sweet sitcoms that leave us with a bad actor taste, while pop stars metamorphosize into soda pop stars. You saw the video, you heard the soundtrack. Well, now go buy the soft drink. Well, the only cola that I support would be a Union COLA cost of living allowance on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. Back again, new and improved. We return to our irregularly programmed schedule, hidden cleverly between heavy-breasted beer and car commercials. CNN, ESPN, ABC, BCB, TNT, but mostly BS, where oxymoronic language like virtually spotless, fresh, frozen, light yet filling, and military intelligence have become standard. TV is a place where phrases are redefined, like recession to necessary downturn, crude oil on a beach to moose, civilian death to collateral damages, and being killed by your own army is now called friendly fire. TV is a place where the pursuit of happiness has become the pursuit of trivia, where toothpaste and cars have become sex objects, where imagination is sucked out of children by a cathode ray nipple. TV is the only wet nurse that would create a cripple. Television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance, feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding